from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting from our studios up in Northeast Pennsylvania. It's good to be back in town. Last week, I was actually calling in from a hotel room in Pittsburgh at the Hampton Inn, a place that I've known very well over the last few years, though admittedly, because of COVID, I think I've only stayed in once or twice over like a two-year period. So it was good to be back in town, catching up with some folks. I had the opportunity to attend the Pittsburgh Airport's Chamber of Commerce Legislative Roundtable that morning. I also had the opportunity to tour Shell's new multi-billion dollar Shell cracker plant while I was in town. Some friends of mine were able to set up a brief tour, but it's just an amazing facility out that way. And of course, I look forward to seeing that facility come online, hopefully at the end of 2022 there, and see what it can really do for the area, the region, the state. Really exciting stuff. But as always, keeping us on the air, joining me in studio, DC Taylor. How are you today, DC?
Oh, yeah. Good, Bill. How are we doing today?
I'm doing well. Like I said, it's good to be back in town after last week's trip out west. Yeah. September and October are looking to be quite busy for my work at Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation and, of course, the energy industry in general. Lots of things are moving with reconciliation in D.C., Reggie in Pennsylvania. It just never seems to end the threats to our industry, I guess I could say.
Okay.
And I do want to give a shout out to Matt Henderson. He is unable to join us again. The guy is busy. The guy is busy. When he signed up to be our co-host, we knew that he would be on the road and doing various projects. Matt does a variety of consulting contracts for the energy industry and some other industries. And just as luck would have it, when we try to do this show, sometimes he's available, sometimes he's not. We do appreciate his participation when he is. And of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Rusty Fender, he'll be joining us in a little bit. As I like to joke, you know, working on top secret stuff, he can only give us a couple of minutes in the show a couple of minutes after the show starts, because he is a busy guy. But of course, I enjoy working with him and look forward to hearing what he has to say when he arrives. Couple of news stories, DC, just picking up on some of the similar trends we were seeing last week. Carbon pricing back in the mix for reconciliation. Senate Democrats have been considering carbon pricing proposals to help pay for the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. ENU News reports that bringing the policy back into the mix, despite potential opposition from progressives and the White House, it's one of several pay-fors that Senate Finance Chair Ron Wyden, a Democrat out of Oregon, is working on as part of an effort to fully offset the massive spending package. I am not a fan of these things. You know, one regard, they say that carbon cap and trade policies are for the betterment of the environment, but they put a hefty price tag on it. You, the consumer, ends up paying more money than you were paying for that same electron, that same gallon of gas, whatever it might be. And at the end of the day, that money disappears in the wash and to pay for all these other things. Personally, I just feel that if you needed to raise more money, raise our income tax, raise our sales tax, raise the things that people can see. Stop creating all these new taxes in lieu of like having to answer for doing these things. That's just my personal opinion, but nobody's calling me from DC these days to see what I think. So again, hopefully it doesn't move through. I know people believe that if you do these carbon pricing proposals, they'll hit the energy company and the energy company will pay more. But I have yet to see an example where one of those things actually works that way. Ultimately, the market bears the final cost of that product, and that product being carbon pricing, of course. How the energy market is changing. Oil's Oracle, Daniel Yergin, describes in his New Dynamics book. Daniel Yergin has written some of the most influential books on energy while advising companies and governments on policy. He is now the vice chairman of IHS Market. His latest book looks at how policies of oil changed in the past two decades when the boom in U.S. shale and the rise in China's demands. Yergin, who is now 74 years old, I didn't realize he was that old, sat down with some of the energy market's most dynamic leaders, and it's just interesting to hear their perspectives. I've read some of Jürgen's books and some of his works, and it's neat. The writing on the wall, you know, we just talked about carbon pricing proposals and things like that. The writing on the wall is already there. Just look at Daniel Jürgen's works, right? The industry goes through these like up and down boom cycles. We have market data that stretches back many decades. And all we see is this trend that costs keeps going up. And everybody says, if you really want to impact, especially low and moderate income families, and you want to create jobs, and you want to do this stuff, we got to keep that price from going up. We need to make it flatline or bring it back down. And it just seems like the answers are there. The historical data is there, but people just choose to chart their own course. And it's frustrating most of the time. How long can U.S. shale producers resist the oil price rally? Oilprice.com reports that it would have been unthinkable a few months ago. Ramping up production was the last thing that U.S. shale drillers would do amidst a hasty price recovery and heavy uncertainty around demand recovery. In those few months, however, a lot has changed. Now U.S. shale drillers may be getting ready to get back to drilling. The current situation in the U.S. is one that the shale companies must have dreamed about during the worst of the crisis over the last 2 years. Inventories are down considerably, and thanks to recovering demand, they continue to remain down. And we're getting ready to go into the winter season, especially up here in the Northeast, where those inventories normally have kept pricing really low during cold winters over the last couple of years. It's just not going to be there. So will the energy industry start to drill more? Will it start to bring more production online? How much production online will it bring? Those are questions that will be answered over the coming months. Will the energy industry be its worst enemy, where it drills too much and drives prices back down to where companies aren't making any money? Consumers benefit in that scenario, but the companies don't. Or will they be a little more conservative in how much they bring back online, maybe meeting market needs and not exceeding market needs? I don't know. I don't have a magic eight ball, DC, or a crystal ball to look at. But I think the energy industry is still licking its wounds a little bit from the last time that the demand for the product dropped out. And I think they're going to go a little bit more conservative into this and see how everything plays out, especially since we don't have the support as an industry of the current administration and, for the most part, the current Congress, which is doing everything they can to add more taxes to our industry, create more regulations. I sound like a broken record week after week, DC. The last 4 years under President Trump, we were talking about major expansions of the industry, clearing roadblocks, clearing unnecessary regulations, and now it's turned right around to talking about how another new tax, another new regulation threatens what we have.
Turn right around.
Very frustrating.
Turn right around, and so quick. 8 months is not a lot of time, and a lot of things. It seems like there's a lot of roadblocks that have just been put up or put back up in just a very short time.
I think it was Labor Day weekend. I paid $100 to fill my truck. Now, granted, my truck has an extended tank, so I have like a 30 or 34 gallon tank or whatever,
right?
But $100.
Yeah,
I don't remember paying over like $60 or $70 to fill that truck.
That is crazy. Pretty crazy.
Oil steadies after a drop in U.S. stockpiles. Gas rallies to spur gains. Bloomberg reports that oil steadied above $72 a barrel after the U.S. crude stockpiles tumbled again, and investors tracked a broader rally in energy prices. West Texas Intermediate edged up after hitting its highest interday trade level since August. And on Wednesday, and U.S. crude inventories dropped by more than 6 million barrels last week to a 2-year low. It is an interesting time, and we will certainly have to cover this over the next couple of weeks. And I'm really curious to see what happens as we get into the winter. Before we get to Fender's Fast Facts, Rusty's about to join us here. I do want to talk about next segment. We have a recording of last week's Think About Energy briefing. And if you followed this show for a long time, you also have heard about these Think About Energy briefings that the energy industry puts on. George Stark, my boss, had the opportunity to interview Mike Summers, president and CEO of API. They discussed a little bit about Mike's recent trip to NEPA, something Mike joined the program to discuss also. But then they started talking about what's going on in D.C., what you need to know if you're interested in energy and basically keeping more of your money versus having to pay more of it in taxes. And lastly, what you can do to step up to have your voice heard and to help prevent these things from happening. So we're going to bring you next segment, the full Think About Energy briefing, and we're excited to share that with you. And I hope that you enjoy the commentary that Mike brings and the commentary that George brings to these important issues. And we look forward to sharing that with you after Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, what do you have for us?
Thanks, Bill and DC. And this weekend in aviation history, a big weekend, the last flight of the Concorde.
I ran
the movie as a projections, by the way, the West Side Theater, Concorde 79. Big movie.
Okay.
One of those George Kennedy, like an airplane movie. They're all the same. You know what I mean?
They're
in a crisis. As soon as they take off, they're in crisis mode.
Of course.
You're either out of coffee or out of sugar or something like that. Right. Interesting facts, though, DC. July 25th, the last commercial flight of the Concorde. Concorde had a takeoff speed of 250 miles an hour.
Wow.
And a cruising speed of 1,750 miles an hour.
Jeez.
That's more than almost three times the speed of sound.
Wow.
Landing speed was 187 miles an hour. It's incredible. Two companies merged into during the expansion to make the Concorde, British Aircraft and France's Aérospatiale. In both French and English, the name Concorde means an agreement.
Okay.
That's pretty interesting.
Okay.
Flights consisted of nine crew members, two pilots. The last aviational flight was the Concorde to employ a flight engineer. That was the last time a flight engineer was used.
Mm-hmm.
So nine crew members, two pilots, a flight engineer, and 16 flight attendants.
Wow.
Holy cow.
All right.
Concorde used to fly 100 passengers, 40 in the front cabin and 60 in the rear. Boy, that made money.
All right.
The last commercial flight, of course, Concorde's flight was from New York to Heathrow. In London. By the time the flights finished, it was the last aircraft which had a flight engineer as part of the crew. During its lifespan, Concorde had over 50,000 flights. 2.5 million passengers flew across the oceans with the Concorde.
Okay.
And in one of the most fascinating Concorde flight was the first round the world trip by Concorde, November 8th, 1986. The airliner flew 28,600 miles miles, 28,600 miles in 29 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
Cruising speed of 2,000 miles an hour.
Jeez.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
DC, why was the Concorde painted entirely white?
Painted white. Let's see. I'm going to go with when you're going that fast, that the color can actually absorb like the air and actually create drag.
Right on the money once again, close. Concorde flew at 60,000 feet. Just think, a commercial airliner flies at 37,000.
Right.
It flew at 60,000 feet, a height of 11 and a half miles.
Yeah.
So passengers were able to see the curvature of the earth from where they sat. Due to the intense surface air friction at 60,000 feet, the actual fuselage stretched 10 inches because of the heat, which is why they have 2 inches of caulking around each window.
Yeah, yeah.
That is truly incredible. Wow. The actual temperature of the aircraft outside was 140 degrees, even though the air temperature was almost below zero.
Yeah, yeah.
You're exactly right. The white reflected and absorbed the intense heat of a supersonic flight on this last weekend, the flight of the Concorde on September 25th. Good job, DC.
All right. Those zooming facts. Zooming out of here. It's thank you, Rusty. It's Fender's Facts here on the Shell Gas News. And stay tuned for more of the Shell Gas News coming up after the break with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and me, DC Taylor. We'll be right here, and I hope you will, too.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system over its life is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too, because it is before taxes.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Welcome, everybody. My name is George Stark, and we're kicking off our fall editions of Think About Energy. And we're really blessed because this time, as we get ready to really relaunch Think About Energy, we're going to have somebody from API join us. You might not know, but API represents us in DC, and they're the largest trade association really focusing on our issues. Their new CEO, Mike Summers, has taken the time this past August to come up and visit with some of the operators in Northeast Pennsylvania. And he had a wonderful visit. And, you know, again, from the community to educators to the workers, he had a chance to visit with them and talk with them. So you're going to get a chance to hear from Mike directly. I don't know about you, but I get pretty excited when I see what we're doing and how we make an impact in a community and across the state. And as what you saw, those numbers don't lie. We're making a tremendous difference in Northeast Pennsylvania. And again, I was glad to be one of the teammates that got the chance to host Mike Summers. So, Mike, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to not just be with us today, but also to be with us in August when you came up to saw the Marcellus hands-on. So thank you for joining us, sir.
George, it's great to be with you again.
Absolutely. I can't say enough about the visit. And, you know, we saw so many different pieces. You saw so much. I'm excited to go over community education, but this isn't about me. Tell me from your standpoint, sir, when you came up, what was your expectation, and what did you see?
Well, George, again, thanks for hosting me today, and thanks for hosting me in Northeastern Pennsylvania. It was an incredible trip. And just to put this in broad perspective, think about the fact that there are about 500,000 direct, indirect, and induced oil and gas jobs in the state of Pennsylvania. And as you know better than anybody, Pennsylvania actually represents, it is the number two natural gas producing state in the United States right now, and supplies about 7% of the natural gas that the world uses. It's an incredible success story, and a success story that wouldn't have occurred were it not for the ingenuity and the innovative nature of America's oil and gas industry. As part of my job as president and CEO of the American Petroleum Institute, I have the great privilege of being able to travel all over the country to see the operations of API member companies and the innovators and problem solvers in America's natural gas and oil industry. And the Marcellus, where Cabot operates and where many of the operators in the state of Pennsylvania have the privilege of operating, is completely different than any other basin in the United States. And it was just really great to see the workers up there and pride that they take every single day in producing the energy that the world needs and that Pennsylvania needs. So it was a great place to visit, and I was proud to meet with many of the people up there who take such pride in the work that they do on a daily basis to supply this energy that is going to continue to be the backbone of energy throughout the world for decades and decades to come.
And I think that the piece that I walked away from was also the workers were happy to showcase to you what they were doing and really go all in on describing their professionalism, their educational background, the tools at their disposal, what keeps them up at night. So when you think about all you saw from that operation standpoint, did a certain few things sort of stand out that impressed you the most from operations?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that we were able to visit a number of API member companies and other businesses up there that have benefited from the natural gas revolution that really started in the great state of Pennsylvania. So, for example, we were able to go to UGI's Manning Compressor Station and their liquefaction plant, which can liquefy about 120,000 gallons of natural gas each day. We obviously visited your sites at Cabot Oil and Gas. And what was I was so impressed with is the great pride that energy workers in the state take in what they're doing. What they're doing, not just from the perspective of our economy, which relies on the production of inexpensive energy for Americans in the world, but you think about the pride that we all take in the fact that because of American energy independence, we're able to make decisions from a national security perspective that we wouldn't be able to make otherwise. We're in a completely different situation than we were just a few short decades ago when we were so reliant on other countries for America's energy. If it weren't for the state of Pennsylvania, we wouldn't be in that position. And the pride that your workforce has taken in pursuing this energy challenge is just inspiring to me, and I think should be inspiring to every American business out there. I also had the chance, George, as you know, to visit an incredible program at Lackawanna College in their new School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. They opened their new headquarters, their new facility there when I was up there, which is really providing the workforce of the future for natural gas production in the state. And what an incredible success story that is, where you have kids coming right out of high school, or maybe they've taken a break from their schooling, but they're learning the skills that are going to be required to continue to stay in Northeast Pennsylvania. It really meets what community colleges are supposed to be all about. You're providing the skills that for the jobs that are in the area. Lackawanna is meeting that challenge every single day. And it was really neat to see some of the graduates of that program in your operations, because they're providing for community needs and world needs by providing energy workers of the future. I also got a chance to tour the Invenergy's Lackawanna Energy Center, which is using natural gas to provide power for about 1 million homes in northeastern Pennsylvania. And in addition to that, I really concluded my trip with a visit to some of the key labor unions that supply the workforce for the energy system in the state of Pennsylvania. And what a great trip that was. They provide a backbone to many of the member companies that we have and ensure that we get the energy from where it is to where it needs to be. So a really great trip. I also had the great chance to sit down with one of your partners, George, at Williams, who provide the pipeline infrastructure to get that energy to where it needs to be. So all around, a great 3 days in the state of Pennsylvania, our Keystone State, and just such a privilege to be with Cabot and other API member companies while on the ground.
And what was so nice is, you know, again, that pride that we show through, we're always excited to talk about 90% of our workforce comes from the surrounding counties. You had a chance to interact with them. They're local. They care about where they work. They take that pride. And then something like as important as where is the next worker coming from? And I know the folks at Lackawanna College were very happy to have you tour their facility. And, you know, they had their open house the same time. I've since talked to the folks at Williams. The school itself has graduated 300, almost 40 students. So you're looking at 330, 340. Williams has had 70 of their employees come from Lackawanna College. So we know that the jobs are being hired locally. You know, the video, the PricewaterhouseCoopers and information, we know how Pennsylvania's economy is doing from wages and growth and jobs. So it was all on display for you. And it really, when you think about it, it didn't need to be put on display. It's just there. It's part of that fabric that you had a chance to see and touch and be a part of. So again, I know everyone I spoke to was happy to have you up there. Any other last minute thoughts on your visit?
Well, what I'd say is it was incredible to me to see this great rural area just embrace this industry because they know the key benefits that come from natural gas production in the state. And it's not lost on me. I get to travel all over the country. The prosperity that has come from natural gas investment and, you know, Cabot's presence in particular in this area, I think has just been really the lifeblood of the economy up there. And it allows kids that don't want to leave the opportunity to stay and get a good paying job in their hometown. And that is really inspirational and something that we should all be aspiring to achieve. But this is what, of course, American Energy has brought that particular area. And I think, you know, what Cabot has brought and what these other API member companies have done for this area is really impressive, because you know that that just continues to build and continues to grow over time. You know, the restaurants thrive, communities thrive, and schools thrive as well because of the tax base. So the incredible investments that are being made up there that will continue for decades and decades to come, because we know where the resources are, and those resources are going to continue to be used and profited from, that we're going to, as an industry, continue to be there for many, many decades to come, and that the jobs are going to continue to flow from that. So I was just so impressed with the pride, of course, of the workforce, but also what it has really meant for these communities. You know, you see the vibrancy up there that you just don't see in a lot of other rural areas. So you have a lot to be proud of, and I was glad to be part of it when I was up there.
Well, I can't thank you enough, and I guess I'm sitting too still here listening to you because my lights went out. Maybe they'll turn back on when I move. But the other piece of this is, and again, I think this just sets us up on our transition nicely, is this idea that you got to see firsthand the technology that we put into position for reducing emissions. Yeah. Because we know that's going to be a big thing. But that was one of the pieces that everybody from the industry across the board had a chance to show you. So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but the way I see it is there was a lot of positivity coming out of your visit less than a month ago, a little more than a month ago, I should say. But here we are now at a different phase in Washington, D.C. And could you sort of walk me through what you see happening there, sir?
Yeah, let's take a step back, though. If you think about the climate challenge, which is really what this emission reduction effort is all about, is how do you reduce greenhouse gas emissions? Let me first say that, you know, one of the incredible things about what you're doing up there and what the American energy revolution has meant, it is because of this natural gas revolution that we've been able to reduce emissions in the United States. It is because natural gas has become more plentiful and more inexpensive that we've been able to replace coal as the number one source of power generation in the United States. So natural gas now provides about 40% of the power that Americans use every single day. That was not the case 10 years ago. And guess what the result has been? Emissions go down every single year as a consequence of that fuel switch from coal to natural gas. So from a broad perspective, what we've been able to do because of the production going on in Pennsylvania is this incredible environmental performance. And it could not happen without the Keystone State. So that's just from a broad national perspective of what we've seen. And we take a lot of great pride in that, and we brag about it to lawmakers every single day. You know, and I always argue, George, as you know, that the most important environmental movement in the world right now is the American natural gas industry. It is the reason that we're able to reduce our GHG emissions. And now what we're trying to do, and we saw this at the UGI Center, what we're trying to do is we're trying to export that environmental progress all over the world through liquefied natural gas. You have a small portion of that, but a lot of that, you know, is in other states as well, where they're liquefying you know, incredible amounts of natural gas and then exporting that to countries all over the world so that they can have that same emissions reduction that we've seen in the United States. There are a lot of people right now in Washington, unfortunately, who don't recognize what we have done in this country and how we've reduced our emissions totals. So what we're focused on right now is making sure that we're educating lawmakers on that, what the environmental record is of that energy revolution. So we spend a lot of time working with lawmakers so that they understand that you can't have an energy future, you can't have an environmental future without natural gas. So right now what's going on in Washington is there's a lot of discussion about how we deal with the big climate challenge. And one of those efforts right now is an effort focused on reducing methane emissions within our industry. But I saw in your operations that you're focused on that already every single day. So we're trying to communicate with lawmakers right now about what the industry already has done and what the appropriate policy response should be during this key time in Congress.
And when you think about all the efforts that you have seen, the benefits to the community, the growth in wages, and the innovation, yet here we sit with, you know, a reaction to a proposal at, you know, $1,800 a ton for methane emissions. You know, how do you react to that one? And what you see is could be really a job killer when we always think that energy ought to be bipartisan. It's pro-American. It's American jobs. It's for growth. It's for all the companies. You know, we help lower senior citizens' energy bills, low income. We have all that benefit. And now we have a proposal on the table that's looking to sort of take us sideways and backwards.
Let's be clear about what Congress is actually talking about right now. They're not actually talking about taxing methane. What they're talking about is taxing production. If they were talking about actually reducing methane, that would be one thing. But that's not what they're talking about at all. They're talking about taxing the most efficient producers, those producers, by the way, that are likely to be the ones that have invested significant dollars already in reducing their methane emissions, not because they want to necessarily reduce methane emissions, but because they're looking to plug a hole in how they pay for other things. API wants to work with Congress. API wants to work with the Biden administration on what the best way is to reduce methane emissions throughout the economy. But that's not what this effort is focused on at all. It's about raising money to pay for other things. So we're working hard right now in Congress to help educate lawmakers on what the appropriate response is to methane emissions, because we know that we can do more. So at the beginning of this year, just as an example, API endorsed the federal regulation of every well in the United States, existing and new wells, to ensure that the right regulatory scheme is in place to ensure that we don't have methane emissions. So we're working through the regulatory process right now on that. We have answers. We also have a program at API called the Environmental Partnership that is all about reducing methane in all of our operations. That's a voluntary program and has seen tremendous results in reducing methane emissions. And we think that's the best way. We have the Environmental Partnership. The EPA should regulate methane, and we're working with them on that now. What we don't need is a money grab from the United States Congress, which is going to be based not on methane emissions, but on productions in productive regions. We don't think that's the appropriate policy response, and we're doing everything we can to fight against it.
So when you think about the things that you're fighting against, you know, do you want to touch base on a couple of the other ideas that you see? You mentioned it. The federal regulation of methane is not a bad thing. There are some bipartisan initiatives that you guys have underway. What are some of those upsides, sir?
Well, look, as you know, George, API actually released in March our climate action framework. So this was a 5-point plan of things that we think the federal government should do. It's also things that the industry will do on its own to address the climate challenge. So we've put forward these proposals to the United States Congress that are based on market mechanisms to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. As you know, I often say, the enemy is not oil and gas. The enemy is emissions. And that's what we're really focused on. is ensuring that we're focused on the emissions that come and how we reduce those emissions. As you know better than anybody, we have a natural economic incentive to reduce those emissions because those emissions come from product that shouldn't be escaping, that we want to sell into the marketplace. So it's in our best interest to reduce those emissions, which is why our program, the Environmental Partnership, is so very, very important. But I encourage, you know, those of you that want to learn more about the API climate initiatives to go to api.org/climate to learn about that plan, because this is a plan that, as I mentioned, isn't just about what the federal government should do, but what the industry will do. As you know, Congress, the administration, we live in a divided governmental time. And I want to make sure that as an industry, we're meeting the climate challenge, even if our Congress cannot. And so we're stepping up to the plate as an industry to do the things that we need to do, and then encouraging Congress to do this in the right way that encourages American energy production, so we're not ceding that energy production to other parts of the world.
And I want to have two additional items there that I know that really bring this home from your visit and what you're telling the elected officials in D.C. You know, one of the visits, you know, you had the chance to watch us with the equipment installed saying this is a second by second calculation. We're capturing the data to really show we're not guessing, we're not estimating. We actually have the equipment here recording any emissions that we're seeing of methane. And again, those are some of the pieces that we're excited that we have that technology. And then we can go to EPA and talk to them about real life, real time emissions. Here's what they are. Let's not have just a simple formula. But I also recall distinctly when one of our interns had the chance to talk to you about how he was manipulating, how he was implementing, how he was making certain that that information was run efficiently and effectively. And it struck me that here is a 21-year-old kid, I think he's a junior or senior in college, and he was committed to reducing those emissions, focused on it, using the best-in-class technology. And at the same time, as easy as you and I are having this conversation, he was telling you how that was done, and that is the piece we have to make certain our elected officials in D.C. see and appreciate.
Well, that's, you know, one of the problems historically with this kind of one size fits all approach that the government often takes is that instead of actually encouraging production and innovation to improve over time, it locks in old technologies that they're going to require one particular kind of technology rather than recognizing the innovative approaches that our membership are taking every single day to reduce their own emissions. So that's why this government knows best, Washington-based approach is never the appropriate response to how we reduce emissions over time. And what I saw at the Cabot facilities is a real focus on reducing emissions within your own operations that far exceeds any regulatory or any estimated approach that comes from Washington, D.C. And we should be empowering people to continue to innovate and continue to reduce emissions, not with some government's decision on what fits the industry. Because I know every single day that your operations and your R&D are focused on new technologies to improve your own operations.
Mike, one of the reasons we have this broadcast, Think About Energy, is just for that reason. We want people to sort of stop and think about it. You know I shared with you, I have three daughters, and we always have this conversation around the dinner table about where your food comes from. And it's always the grocery store, and that's not the case. It comes from the farm. And that's what led us to have literacy around Think About Energy. I think we're to the point now where the folks that are actively engaged in this broadcast are paying attention. They're learning more and more and more. What would one of the things that you would want our viewers, our listeners to be thinking about so that they can become their best industry advocates?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, George, you and I talked about this. I have three kids as well. And, the energy literacy that we all have to do on a daily basis with our own kids and our own families, I think is really important. You know, I remember, for example, explaining the difference between gasoline and natural gas to one of my kids, you know, turning on the stove and showing this is natural gas and what you put in your gas tank is gasoline. So that, first of all, it has to begin at home, because I think the energy literacy that people have is significantly less than we even realize, even in our own backyards with our own children. So it has to start with your own families, and, you know, around the, you know, Thanksgiving table or the dinner table, we have to be ready to engage in those kinds of conversations, because it is so, so very important. Because you're right, people don't know their food comes from the farm. People don't know that their energy where their energy comes from either. So that's a really important component. The second thing is, you know, we need people who work in this industry to stand up for this industry. You know, the some of the best spokesmen for the industry, you know, don't necessarily come from the American Petroleum Institute, but they come from the people on the ground. You need to talk to your lawmakers. You need to, you know, educate Congress on where that energy comes from and what a difference it has made for the American economy. You know, we talked about the 500,000 jobs in the state of Pennsylvania. That's 11.3 million jobs in the United States. It's almost 8% of American GDP. And as I mentioned, I think one of the most compelling arguments is what it has meant for American national security. If it weren't for this industry, we'd still be getting most of our energy from overseas. And Americans don't want to be held hostage. They don't want to be dependent on any other country. And that's where we were just a couple of decades ago. And if it weren't for the energy revolution that really took hold in the state of Pennsylvania, that's where we would be today. And so that energy education has to be talked about every single day at the kitchen table and then all the way to Congress and your state legislatures as well.
And it's fun because, again, you know, you visited Susquehanna County, you saw the gas being produced. And one of those conversations I was having this summer with my family was the athletes at the Olympic Village are being cooled by natural gas produced by Cabot in Susquehanna County. Well, what do you mean, Dad? Yes, it gets on an LNG. It gets through the Panama Canal 28 days later from the ground in Susquehanna County to an electric generating facility in Japan, making certain that the cooling, the air conditioning, was provided by us. That's the piece that we're excited about. That's the piece that we don't want to be held hostage. We want to use this as a natural effort to promote energy independence, what we have going on here. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out to see it firsthand, to really take part and talk to the folks over the barbecue who are truly doing their darndest every day. And then you had a chance to see new students coming into this industry and the pride that we can instill upon them for having the best class technology, implementing it, putting it forward. I know that we will end our broadcast with some places that folks can go. Energy Citizens will be one of them. We're going to direct them to another location. Will be some letter writing that we have specifically as Cabot Oil and Gas and some of the other companies here in Pennsylvania, encouraging people to say to Senator Joe Manchin, keep up the fight. We need you. We hear you. We also want to make certain that folks like Connor Lamb or Tim Ryan in Ohio understand the value and the benefits that we bring. And at the same time, even Senator Casey in Pennsylvania, we want our voice to be heard so he sees it. We're going to do those things on our end. I'll give you the last second, though, to say what more do we need to do to make certain that all this prosperity, wages, jobs, economic development continues. You'll have a final say, sir.
Yeah. So look, I'd say, first of all, tell your story. You know, we're in this industry, we're an industry of geologists and engineers and people who are focused on numbers. The numbers are important, but the stories are more important. Tell your story. Tell it to your lawmakers. Tell them what this industry has meant to you. The people of the America's natural gas and oil industry and those that have benefited from it. Tell that story. Go to Energy Citizens, which is the API program that where you can sign up and communicate directly with your lawmakers. and continue to fight for this industry, because I believe that it is literally the future of this country. That if we can continue to be this economic powerhouse, we have to have an energy system that meets that challenge, that meets our ability to continue to produce the best businesses in this country. And all of them depend on American energy and American innovation. So, and it started all right there in the Keystone State. So it was a great trip to Northeastern Pennsylvania. And George, it was really great to be with you today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We will stay in touch, Mike. Thank
all
you.
The best.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's continuing education department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Right now, it is time for the top five. We're going to give you the top five stories of the first 6 months of 2021 from MarcellusDrilling.com. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. Now, this week, again, is the top five stories of the past or the first 6 months of 2021. It's January 1st to June 30th, 2021. So the number five story for the first half of 2021, huge news, Permian driller Cimarex buying out Cabot Oil and Gas. This is from May 24th. We're devastated. We know you're not supposed to have favorites, but we do. Our favorite Marcellus Utica driller for years has been Cabot Oil and Gas. We know some great folks who work for Cabot, and it's been a peerless operator. Some great folks.
So do we.
Some great folks and also Bill DeRozier.
You didn't say it. I was going to kill me.
All right. Sorry, Bill. We love you, buddy. It's been a peerless operator in the Northeast Marcellus, making money when nobody else could. Cabot treats its landowners well, cares about the environment, gives big money to local nonprofit causes. You got that right. And in general, is the best kind of corporate citizen anybody could wish for. We suppose it was only a matter of time before Cabot became a target in this merger mania we're currently going through. This announcement, Cabot announced a merger of equals with Cimarex, a big driller in the Permian and Mid-Continent. The truth is, Cimarex is buying out Cabot. Why do we not hold to the merger of equals narrative being peddled by both companies? Because Cimarex shareholders will own 50.5% of the new company, and Cabot shareholders will own 49.5%. Because Cabot CEO Dan Dinges,
that is true. Dinges
will become executive chairman of the board, largely a ceremonial position, and Cimarex CEO Thomas Jordan will become the CEO of the new company. Yes, they're merging. Yes, many people from Cabot will have jobs in the new company, but make no mistake, Cimarex is buying out Cabot. No money will change hands in the deal. It's an all-stock transaction. Supposedly, regional offices in Pittsburgh and Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania, will remain open. We'll see. Yes, we are devastated that the premier MU driller will no longer be an independent company. The world has just fundamentally changed.
Yeah, big story there, DC.
Yeah.
Another sinkhole appears near the Mariner East 2 site in Chester County, Pennsylvania. It's number 4, D.C. Mm-hmm. Another sinkhole has appeared in Chester County, Pennsylvania at a Mariner East 2 pipeline construction site. Now, this time, it's located near the Chester County Library. The sinkhole is approximately 23 feet long, 10 feet wide, and 6 feet deep. It runs between two existing older pipelines that actively carry petroleum products. Not good. This is not the first time sinkholes have appeared in Chester County related to ME2 construction. Last summer, the State Public Utility Commission conducted an investigation into sinkholes, plural, in the area. The area has a karst topography. Think of it as Swiss cheese. Underground, where there are a lot of holes carved out of the sandstone deposits over the years. Mariner East didn't create the karst topography, but it suffers from its presence, DC.
All right. The number 3 most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com for the first 6 months of 2021. Cash net gas price goes crazy in Oklahoma over $600 per MMBTU.
Multi-million British thermal unit.
Thank you. This multi-million British thermal unit. Thanks. I don't work in the industry.
Not yet.
This is from February 16th. Supply and demand. That's what it's all about in a pure commodity market like natural gas. Supply and demand just about came off the rails this one Friday back in February in Oklahoma as the price of natural gas selling along Oneok Gas Transmissions, OGT, 23 interstate and 20 intrastate pipeline connections entered the stratosphere. At one point, the cash price for net gas in Oklahoma was fetching $600 per multi-million BTU. This is no joke. No. That's the highest price paid for net gas ever. However, prices in the Northeast stayed about even, trading much higher than the one-year average, but not anywhere near the prices in the Mid-Continent region. The reason for the berserk price behavior is an unusual cold snap in the nation's midsection, a nationwide cold snap, actually. The cold caused a number of pipelines and gas wells to close due to freeze-offs. The freeze-offs in Oklahoma led to a dramatic historic rise in the cash price for natural gas on Friday, this one Friday back in February, in the Sooner State. In an MDN postscript, not long after the price actually went past $1,000 per multi-million BTU, it was a truly crazy time. Large parts of Texas and Oklahoma were in a deep freeze during that period.
Another
that
story big story, from February. Yeah. Big good. Time. One from February 26th, D.C. Number 2, Biden breaks the no-frack ban promised to Pennsylvania with his fifth week in office. Again, this from February. Remember the statement uttered by then-candidate Joe Biden as he stood in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which sits on the Delaware River Basin, when he emphatically promised Pennsylvania residents and union workers, "I'm not banning fracking in Pennsylvania or anywhere else," end quote. It took them slightly less than 5 weeks to break that promise. Yesterday, the Biden administration, in the form of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which is an executive branch agency, abstained and then voiced moral support for the DRBC's vote to ban fracking in the Delaware River Basin. That action bans fracking in two northeastern Pennsylvania counties where there are frackable shale deposits. 5 weeks. Still happy you voted for Lion Biden?
All right. The number one most popular story for the first 6 months of 2021 on MarcellusDrilling.com. Antero update. Drilling 80 to 85 wells in 2021. New $550 million investor. This is a story from February 19th. Antero Resources, one of the largest drillers in the Marcellus Utica, working primarily in West Virginia, issued its fourth quarter and full year 2020 update back in February. During the fourth quarter, Antero pumped an amazing 3.65 billion cubic feet per day equivalent of natural gas. Antero is the third largest producer of natural gas in the U.S. The company drills in the wet gas region and reports selling 132,000 barrels per day of NGLs to both Marcus Hook near Philadelphia and Hopedale in Ohio. Antero is the second largest NGL producer in the U.S. As part of the quarterly update, Antero announced it has formed a drilling partnership, in other words, recruited a new investor, with Quantum Energy Partners, which is investing $500 million, between $500 and $550 million, into Antero's drilling program beginning this year and running until 2024. Antero plans to drill up to 85 wells this year and complete 70 wells. Well costs average $690 per lateral foot in the fourth quarter, but are forecast to drop to $660 in the first half of this year and further decline to $635 per lateral foot for the second half of 2021. Antero has always had one of the best hedging programs in the business. During the fourth quarter of 2020, the company received an average of $3.12 per million cubic feet equivalent, a 46-cent premium to NYMEX pricing. Antero placed 11 horizontal Marcellus wells to sales during the fourth quarter with an average lateral length of 15,788 feet. So there you go. Your top five most popular stories and the most read stories on MarcellusDrilling.com for the first half of 2021, January 1st through June 30th, 2021. MarcellusDrilling.com. If you want to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email, MarcellusDrilling.com/email.
Thank you, DC Taylor. And SGS in Pennsylvania, looking for a measurement technician that's based in Mansfield, the northern tier. Leidos, looking for a materials scientist headquartered in Pittsburgh. TC Energy, a technical training instructor out of West Alexander. ROC Service Company, looking for multiple experienced roustabouts, general labor hands, and experienced heavy equipment operators, excavators included. That's based in Williamsport. Dominion Energy, an opening for a natural gas laborer and their pipeline field specialist, both out of Renovo. Crosby Energy Services, natural gas control room operator. It's out of Montoursville. Arkea Energy, a biogas development engineer for the entire Keystone State of Pennsylvania. PPL Corporation, looking for a project and contract manager headquartered at their headquarters in Allentown. In Ohio, Diversified Oil and Gas, a land technician and a SCADA analyst that's out of Canton. Central Ohio Technical College, looking for an engineering technology oil and gas professor that's out of Newark. The Kimball Companies, an oil and gas administrative assistant opening out of Dover. Ohio Oil and Gas Energy Educational Program, looking for an operations and finance manager out of Granville. Gulfport Energy, a measurement technician out of St. Clairsville. Duke Energy, an opening for an engineer level one or level two natural gas only. It's out of Cincinnati. And Kinder Morgan, an operations specialist opening out of Cumberland. In West Virginia, Wagner Energy Services, LLC, looking for a wellhead, torque, and test field technician. That'll be headquartered in Marietta. Antero Resources, looking for a contract specialist for their procurement division out of West Union. Shale Pro Energy Services, a field technician and a roustabout out of Moundsville. Cooper Machinery Services, looking for welders. That's out of Huntington, seven openings. Preston Contractors Incorporated, a heavy equipment operator out of Star City. Kyman Energy, looking for a measurement technician out of Proctor. And Southwest Energy, looking for a field operator and a regulatory analyst, both positions out of Jane Lou. Now in New York State, Vineyard, oil and gas company. It's Vineyard, looking for a gas accounting analyst out of Mayville. Marathon Energy Corporation, a service dispatcher out of Woodside. Mirabito, natural gas and electric, looking for a natural gas and electric account executive out of Albany. Empire Natural Gas Corporation, a technical operations analyst headquartered in Greene. And Southern Cross Field Services, looking for a field technician. General Labor and Utilities out of Conyers. One more. Con Ed, looking for a natural gas scheduler. That's an energy analyst at their headquarters in Valhalla, New York. And those, my friends, are the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Thank you so much for joining us here on a network of stations. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. The Shale Gas News.